Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that's stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Oh, that's my girl doing my commercial. Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast. Kim, that I just talked to her a couple weeks ago, and she's going to be doing a gift certificate for some kind of special event, and she's going to upload it for Stars. I'm kind of excited, and she did the commercial. When I used to do some of the radio shows, she did a commercial for me, and that's her lovely voice, and I always love it. This is my favorite. You're going to hear it every time I do a show. But anyways, I want to let everybody know that the new issue of the magazine is up, mysticlivingtoday.com. It's a good size one again. It's probably not my super biggest. I mean, I've had bigger ones, but it's really strange because all the material that has come into me has been geared to world events or standing up. And just a lot of great stuff in there. You really should go see it. And I'm still working on my flip magazine for it, and that's down the road just a little bit because it's not simple. I mean, it takes a lot of work. I'll have help with it, but nonetheless, you know, it's coordinating it all and putting it together. I'll still be the editor, if you want to call me that, I guess. But anyways, and also stars with a Z, psychics.com. That's the site that's got my beautiful stars on it. We are redesigning it, but I've kind of put a little hold on it just because of what's going on in the world. People, you know, it's a strange time for everybody. I don't know if it is for you, but it has been for me. And, you know, I'm kind of self-contained. I'm here in my office, and I've got my radio show, and I've got this, and I've got that. But there are people out there that really are faced with a lot of obstacles. And the lady that I have tonight is going to be perfect for this. And it's not unusual that more and more are coming to the radio show that do a lot of different spirituality kind of things and all of that. But we're still offering 3 minutes. First 3 minutes are free for first-time clients. I'll probably keep that for a while yet. I don't know. I thought about taking it off, but I think I'll just leave it. I mean, it's not hurting anything. You know, it really isn't. You get to sample what the reader can do. It's not very much time. But, you can only do so much on a site like that. But anyways, okay, without further ado, I'd love to say that, I'm bringing in my special guest. We've already chatted already, and she is a co-founder of something called New Dimensions Consulting. And she, actually it's Solutions, I think. She's probably going to correct me and say, no, that's not right. But anyways, I want to welcome Rashida Shabazz. How are you, dear heart?
Hello, Miss Natalie. Thank you so much for having me. I'm fabulous. How are you this evening?
So she's fabulous. Don't you love that? Oh, I'm fabulous, too. You know, I asked for the show. I'm going to feed my deer, all 7 or 8 of them. And
oh, nice.
That gives me a lot of joy. It's a good-sized herd. I'm really hoping to have maybe a little fawn or two this spring, early summer. That's what I'm hoping for. I will be so thrilled. I will just be so thrilled. But I'm thrilled with them anyways. Okay, so let's get started here about, you know, you're in human resources, you do empowerment, you do speaking, leadership, you're a growth coach. I mean, you have an awful lot of modalities within you. You do so many things. But like I asked you before, I want to start at the very beginning, not, you know, when you were a little girl, but when you kind of got into high school, I mean, did you always know what you were going to do? Was this from the family, or you just knew that I have to do something? I have to make a difference in the world, because I'm sure you are.
Well, thank you so much for that, Natalie. And what's so funny about that is that it's something that I think about often. I remember, speaking of high school, there was a day, I probably was in the 9th or 10th grade, and I saw a young man who was sitting at the table by himself for breakfast. And, you know, in high school, who wants to sit by themselves at breakfast, right? Or sit by themselves at all? Most teens, most youth don't. And I looked at him, and I remember my heart grieving, Natalie.
Yeah, because
so
he was
I'd never seen him a day in my life, never spoken to him ever. But I walked up to him and I asked, I said, would you like some company? Would you like me to sit down with you? And it wasn't anything that I consciously thought. It was literally heart and spirit led. I always knew that I was unique. I knew that I was different. Not until several years later did I understand that it was a gift and literally my contribution to the world.
You know, I mean, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles, California.
Okay, you're just resonating with me because I was born and raised in Detroit. And, tough city, very tough city.
Yes.
Not for me.
Absolutely.
Because I was this little tough ball of fire anyhow. But, I mean, but it was a time when, you know, we had the riots. We had one riot there. And but I would look at these people and I'd say, what is wrong with you? I questioned it, you know, and I was a teenager. What is wrong with all of you? Why can't everybody get along? I don't get it. I used to go to Virginia Farrell, downtown Detroit, by myself on two buses, alone. This should make sense to you. And I stopped, the second bus I picked up, it was like in this deserted, like an alcove kind of thing. There was nobody around. The buildings were closed. I mean, anybody could have been waiting for me. I never got bothered by anybody. I walked the streets of Detroit like I owned it. I mean, that's the truth. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is that, I ended up working in two tennis clubs. Three tennis clubs. One of them was the Northwest Y. It was a Women's Young Association. They had some tennis courts. And it changed radically there. And I want to let everybody know you are a beautiful black woman, and that's why I'm bringing this up. I want everybody to understand something about how my life went and how you and I are talking like we've known each other forever. I was in this club, and this is no joke. I was surrounded by big black men. They played tennis. But you know what? Rashida, they adored me. They treated me like a little princess. That is no innuendos, no remarks, no nothing. When I would close the salon, I worked in a salon too. When I would close the club, they would walk me to my car, at least three or four of them, because it would be like dusk, you know. It was in Detroit, so, you know, the sun was going down. It was pretty dark. The lights were on in the parking lot, but it wasn't very safe there. And I said, well, I'm okay. No, get in your car, start your car, and when you take off and you're going down, it was called Grand River, when you're going down Grand River, okay. And if you raise such a fuss, we're going to follow you all the way home to make sure you get home. And they were serious. And I was an astrologer, and a lot of times they'd ask me to run their charts for them and all that. I just had the best time, the best experience ever while I was working there.
Well, Natalie, you know what I have to bring this up, and I think that I would be doing the story of my life an injustice if I didn't. It sounds probably a bit fairytale-ish, but I also think that my heart is innate, right? I really do believe that it's God-given. However, I also believe that it was a state of nurture, Natalie. My mother was a special education teacher, And my father was a community activist who owned several nonprofit organizations. And so as a child, outside of my older brother, my first best friend was a special needs quadriplegic. And I say that to say my parents from a very early age didn't give me much space to raise up biases, if you will. Of course, we all have them. But I was raised in such an inclusive family, in such an inclusive community. The love was just widespread. My father had a nonprofit organization where we went in and out of the inner city to feed those who were at risk. So, and then we had community partners who helped in it. So I worked with a very diverse public of all creeds and nationalities and background and ethnicities and faith bases.
Uh-huh.
And so it's literally what I grew up seeing from the earliest age I can remember, probably even before five, Natalie. And I can say that because I saw my mother and my father give so much love to so many people, it probably was just a bit automatic for me. So it was nature and nurture, you know. It was something that I believe that I was born with, and then it was reinforced by the family that I was blessed with.
Well, sounds almost like we had some similarities in our background, in a way. I mean, my father was a machine repair man, but I mean, he worked at a broaching company in Detroit. I mean, everything was in Detroit. But mm-hmm. he was loved by so many people. They would call him, go get Andy to fix it, because he could fix anything, any machine, anything he could fix. He was well known, right? Well, you know, his little girl was right beside him whenever in the neighborhood somebody had a broken down washer or dryer or a refrigerator. I'd go right along with him because I wanted to learn, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think he taught me so much. I mean, he was quiet. He was a real gentle kind of man. But, he knew I was watching him, and he'd say, well, do you know how to do this? Do you know what kind of pliers those are? What about these screwdrivers here? Do you know what this is? Do you know what channel locks are? Do you know what this is? He taught me everything, and this is no joke. And I think, did you come from a big family?
I did not. It was my mother and father and my brother and I. But this is what I have to also make clear as you're mentioning that, Natalie. I grew up in a very sheltered home. And so what that meant was is that we didn't play outside. We didn't watch TV during the week. Natalie, believe it or not, this is absolutely no lie. I never ate dinner, away from the dinner table until after I was 18. Every single night of my life, we had the TV turned off, and we would sit together as a family and have dinner and discuss our day, our goals, our dreams, what was important. My father would have us read books and dictionaries and write book reports. So it was not only very sheltered, but very structured. In that, I grew up with a very, very, very strong family unit. And so I really think that out of that, I really valued the importance of family. Now, my parents came up in larger sized families, so I definitely have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles, so I definitely have that exposure. But within my immediate family, it was just us four.
Well, I don't ever remember, like you, eating unless it was at the table, kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I would snack in our little living room because it was a small house in Detroit. And I would have a little snack in the living room watching TV. But, oh, no, you were at the table and we waited for my dad to come home.
Absolutely.
That's the way it was. That's the way it was. And when you look at what's going on now, and who was I talking to? Somebody, and I said, can you imagine not having a cell phone? You know, really, think about it. Think about it.
I don't know how we did it. I don't know how we did it 30 years ago.
I don't know.
We did it.
And we had phones that were the old-fashioned. I'd get a long cord, and, you know, the headset, I would drag it all the way around, stretch off the cord to talk to whoever I wanted to talk to, maybe laughing with my girlfriend. We didn't really talk about anything really serious, but you didn't want anybody to hear, you know, of course not. So that's what we would do. And I'm just wondering if, I mean, you and I we're pretty accomplished. You are, for sure. I mean, I do what I do, but
so
I'm wondering if childhood, if everybody's childhood would have something similar to ours, if they would not be like us. They would not... I don't know. I don't know. I work with my granddaughter, you know, because I want her to know these things. My son is wonderful. I mean, you know, do you have children, Rashad?
I do. Oh. I have a phenomenal 22-year-old son, and my daughter will be 20 in April, next month. So, and they are the light of my life and two brilliant human beings, and to be perfectly honest, my greatest teachers.
Isn't that funny? They do teach you, don't they?
When I tell you, Natalie, the lessons I get from my children are amazing. And I am probably what you would call an unorthodox parent, where I give my children the liberty to speak to me freely. And so a lot of the questions that I would ask growing up, and I still do it now as they're adults, I'm not one of those parents that say you're out of my house and, you know, fend for yourself at 18. My job is to parent and to walk with them throughout the entirety of their lives, or at least as long as I'm here. And one of the questions that I remember asking them, and I do so even now, is how can I do better? You know, how can I better serve you as a parent? And I learned so much from them, and out of creating and fostering and forging that type of relationship, I just learned so, they're just so wise. And sometimes I look at them and I say, I cannot believe that I was so blessed with these two kids. Like, what did I do, you know?
Yeah, they chose you. Actually, they chose you, you know. That's an old, they chose you. Sometimes I think about my parents. I know about my father, but my mother, you know, she grew up in a family of 10. She was the oldest of 10. So when she, after she got married and she came from Pennsylvania, moved to Detroit, okay, to work, oh, she knew what she wanted. She was ahead of her time. She could have been in politics. That's how good she was. And I had resentment to her because she didn't spend a lot of time with me. But now I look back and I see she didn't, because it was what she didn't have when she was growing up, and she was determined to have what she wanted, and she did. She really did. And I guess she passed it along, her leadership abilities, passed it along to me. But I have this quietness about me that's from my dad, I think. I can be really shy. I mean, if you talk to Robert about it, he'd say, oh, her shy? You're kidding. But it's true. It's true. It's true. I could be very shy and you know, not know what to say and what do you want to talk about. But that's just not me. Okay, so how did you get into human resources?
To be perfectly honest, I think it was divine and strategic, to be perfectly honest, Natalie. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and we laughed because I said, who as a child or even as a teen says, I want to work in HR when I get older? Like, nobody says that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I found is my first exposure to HR was when I was 18 years old. It was my first year in college. And I was a student assistant as a recruiter. And as we all know, quote, unquote, that is the most unsexiest part.
Yeah.
And I use that vernacular, you know, of HR alongside of benefits. But what I found as I walked through my adulthood was a profound love for people.
Ah.
And when I attached myself to that truth, it's like HR just unfolded. Because often, Natalie, what people think is that HR is policy, process, compliance, hiring and firing. And although it is all of those things, I am a very, very strong believer that when you take care of people, they take care of you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When you have a strong leader, leaders have the ability to train, develop, inspire, and motivate movement that otherwise wouldn't take place if you didn't foster and manage healthy relationships, if you didn't build healthy relationships. And what I knew I had, Natalie, was a gift with became innate. You know how often people talk about, well, Are you the friend who people always call for advice? Are you the friend that people trust with their vault information? Are you the person? And I found myself checking all of the boxes to say yes. And it wasn't a burden to me. Natalie, it was life-giving. And like you were just talking about earlier when you were talking about your seven babies or so, it's what gave me joy and fulfillment. So after I would help people, after I would talk to people, after I would coach, after I would mentor, I would find myself fueled. I would find myself inspired. It felt like somebody blew fresh wind in my life after I had an opportunity to help someone else. And that's when I knew HR was it, coaching was it, counseling was
it. Because when you think about HR, you think, oh, God, I got to go to HR because something's wrong. You're going to – then they have the ability to fire you. I know that because I remember my girlfriend telling me, oh, God, they got to go to HR, human resources. That was what it was. And that, and that was not – didn't have a good connotation. It just was not a good place to go.
Right. And so what I strive to do as an HR executive and as an HR leader and just a leadership professional is I strive every day with every interaction to redefine what that looks like. And so whenever I walk into a job site, whether it's consulting or whether I'm paid to be there as an employee, one of the first things that I do is I let them know this is a safe space. And when you close the door, you are free to say what you want to say and to be who you need to be in this moment, and to get rid of that stigmatic, very pessimistic view of if you get called to HR, you're in trouble. If you get called to HR, you're being fired. But to understand that it's one of the healthier relationships that you should have, not only as an employee, but as a leader. It's one of the healthier relationships that you should have, and it should be a safe space. And it should be a space of guidance. It should be a space of motivation. It should be a space of training, of development. And like I said, I'm huge on coaching and mentorship because one thing that I understand about human resources and just the workforce as a whole, Natalie, is this. When you hire someone, you hire the entirety of who they are. You don't get to pick portions of the person that you hire.
Sure.
Even when people say things like, well, you keep your personal life at home. Well, that's pretty impossible because my personal life is a huge portion of who I am. So it's about really being a blessing and ministering to the whole person and ensuring that the whole person feels valued, the whole person feels heard, and that there's a map or a road to success that someone other than yourself cares about. And it makes all the difference in the world. And it's one of the huger passions in my life, Natalie.
You know, listening to you, it reminds me of working for the executive director at the Y. Her and I just hit it off. Of course, I would do a reading for her around her birthday always, and I ended up typing her thesis for her, which was such an honor. The little typist, you can do this? You can do this? So I ended up, and we're still friends today, and that's been many years. But I would watch her. She dressed to the nines. She always had heels on. She ran the whole branch, you know. And I would watch her, and I would feel like such a slob. But then, next to somebody like her, I mean, I'm not, but you know what I'm saying. You look at she had, her clothes, her long coat. I mean, she just looked really good all the time. But that was her position. That was her job. And when she would ask for me, she page me to come into her office. Everybody thought, uh-oh, you're in trouble. And I thought, I'm not. No, I'm not. That's my friend. But we didn't tell anybody. But I think about those times and what I learned from her at the Y, which was, a place of you could cultivate friendships and all that kind of stuff. And it was when we look back at our lives, I think, we can see why we are where we are today. What pleased us? What made us unhappy? Why did we do certain things? I knew right away what I had to be in. I mean, it was easy for me, but probably for you too. And you don't have to be outspoken about it. You just have to listen, and you have to watch and see, well, maybe I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you this. How do you empower people? That's a good question.
And it's so funny. I was just going to say that. Not only is it a good question, but I so appreciate you asking the question, Natalie. And if I get too long-winded, let me know. But you definitely struck my passion place. And the reason why I say that is I believe one of the first ways that you empower someone is by walking alongside of them and reminding them of who they are. And for some, it's for walking alongside them so that they can discover who they are. Who are you in your glorious power? Why you were created? What is your purpose in life? And so as you empower people, what's important to understand is that it is not predicated about it's not predicated upon the perceptions and the thoughts and the feelings of other people, but truly who you are. And so the first step that I take when empowering people is to walk alongside them in the process of self-love, self-worth, self-confidence, self-identity. And I throw all of these self phrases around and they sound fancy. But Natalie, I know in the length of time that you've done what you're doing, you know that that is a huge task and that is a huge undertaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what happens is that it goes back to the stories that we were talking about earlier. And we bring the childhood traumas and we bring the hurts and we bring the pains. And what has happened is that through those sets of experiences, what life has done is it's told us a story. And whether that story is true or false, we have the responsibility to accept it. And so when we are talking about empowering someone, it's literally starting from a place of truth and asking the question, Natalie, who am I? And not who am I from the standpoint of what do I do, how many children do I have, am I a wife or am I a husband, but truly who are you? Are you passionate? Are you loving? Are you forgiving? Are you hurt? Are you traumatized? Whatever that definition is, and working to the place of healing and wholeness. And that's the first place to start when you're talking about being empowered, because it's talking about walking in the space of truth. And I also have to say this, Natalie, when you were talking about your previous boss, what I was thinking was, it seems like we might be the same person or cut from the same cloth.
Because often
people would tell me, oh, my gosh, you know, we love the way you dress. And what happened was is that not only, and this is an important message for me to communicate and to articulate, Natalie, is that when you begin to love yourself, there are expressions of self that are exemplified that otherwise would not be. I tell folks all the time, I said, sometimes you'll see me in a flower shirt with some patterned pants and some striped shoes. And you know what I do? I walk with my chin up, my shoulders rolled back, a gorgeous smile on my face, because I've grown to a space to be comfortable enough with myself to be able to share with myself, to be able to share with the world, excuse me, who I really am. And out of that, just as your former supervisor, now friend, has done with you, it pulls you in and it gives you a sense of courage and of bravery to say, you know what, I can do that too. Or you know what, that is possible. And so what happens is that as you grow and as you grow in self-love, not only do you become empowerment for yourself, but for others, because you become an example of what it is. Because often what happens is, Natalie, is that people want to do a thing. They want to be a thing, but we just need to see an example.
Yeah, you know, it's really tough right now. I mean, I keep thinking about the world, and a lot of people have lost their way. They really need people like yourself. They need somebody to tell them, it's okay, you can express yourself, it's okay, but there's a way to do it. There is a way to do it. I mean,
you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I listen to everything that's going on. I can't watch the news too long because it gives me a massive headache, because it's just, I just want to get up on a table and say, look, listen up here.
Yes.
You know what? And I've said this every show. Everybody comes to this table. We do not leave until we solve our differences. We do not leave until we decide what's right and what's wrong. And they all know what's right and what's wrong.
Absolutely.
People know.
I agree.
And, of course, I probably would get shot or something. I don't know. But that's, you know, and we don't leave. You can have your lunch. You can have your bathroom breaks and all that, but you're not going anywhere. You're going to stay here until this is resolved, period. You know, and this, I just don't understand. I mean, you know, I talk to God every day. I just don't like what I'm seeing. I really, really don't.
Right.
But sometimes there has to be something that happens that's really major for many to step back and look at it and say, whoa, look what's going on here. We can't have this. We cannot have this. This is not right. I have people saying to me, well, why is all of this happening? You know, why does somebody want to have so much power? And I said, well, it just goes back to ancient times. I mean, long time ago. That's what happens. You get power, then you want more, then you want more. But you and I are not, and people that are listening, we are not like that at all. So we just have to keep spreading the good word, showing people the right way. You know, I really...
And I also think it's about perspective, too, Natalie.
Yes.
And when I mean perspective, and technically perspective is probably not even a strong enough word, but just the first word that came to mind, because what I'm also thinking as you talk is great tragedy is heartbreaking. It causes great despondency and heartbreak and whatnot. But what I've noticed through the pandemic and through the current injustice that we're seeing globally right now is we get peaks of phenomenal humanity, Natalie.
Oh, yeah.
We see the coming together of nations. We see the coming together of diverse publics that we wouldn't normally either see or otherwise pay attention to on any other given day.
And it's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. And it doesn't necessarily release the heartache of the tragedy that's happening in the world, but it goes back to a conversation that I often have with my children. Even when they see a person who's walking across the street who needs help, or a person whose car breaks down and you have two or three people who get out of their car and help them push, in the midst of injustice and hurt and pain and tragedy, we also get an opportunity to experience a restoration of our faith in humanity, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, even if it's just in small pockets, because oftentimes one of my favorite pastors, Pastor Michael Todd, says this, and he was talking about it in another context, but I really think that it's fitting for now. And he was talking about trust, that it's lost in buckets but gained in drops. And I think that that's just the way that the world works, right? That we have to be mindful and very cognizant of the opportunities where those drops come in and be careful to catch them when they do, with the understanding that with the way that the world works, most things are lost in buckets. But we have to be encouraged. And again, that word again that you and I both love so much, empowered by the drops, understanding that there's power in the drops, understanding that there's purpose in the drops, that there's absolutely something beneficial, phenomenal, and breathtaking that can take place with small drops. We see it every day. We see it with world leaders. We've seen it for hundreds of years, where little has become much. And that's where our hope lies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a lot of lessons to be learned at this time, lots of lessons to be learned. You know, it's so inspiring. It really is. But
yes.
It's heartbreaking at the same time. I mean, isn't that kind of strange? You get inspired
it's
and then you feel.
For sure. Yeah.
but yet you feel really bad. But yet what people can do when they come together, and I'm talking about what's going on in the world, you know. Okay, we don't want them to come down our road, so how do we stop them? Well, we stop them with us. Either with us or with something big, something heavy.
Mm-hmm.
People start really coming out and coming up with all these ideas, and I'm kind of amazed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Think about it, you know? It's just because they're forced to do it, because they want to preserve what they have. And, oh, I just want something good from all. Well, something good will come from this. I know that, but it's just... I hate to see people die because of this. It's probably one of my worst things that I can hear. But yet, you know, you
well,
want
you know
help
where
them.
My hope is? You know where my hope remains, Natalie, that, and it's so funny because I am very sensitive to people, right? Some people would say it's discernment. Some people would say it's being an empath, depending on what word you would like to use and what your faith base is. But so I feel it, and it's painful and it's hurting. But
yep.
My hope comes from the fact that light always overcomes darkness, Natalie.
Oh, yes.
And it's the simple truths that we have to hold on to in the times of great travesty and tragedy and hurt and pain. And that doesn't mean that that truth will keep me from not being sad and that it'll answer, you know. It'll be an end-all, be-all. But at the end of the day, if I can reach for anything, it's that I know at the end of the day, when it is all said and done, light will always overcome darkness.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it's just, I mean, I want to ask you too, do you see more people needing help now in the line of work you do? Now, I know you're a co-founder of New Dimensions, and
yep.
I had Robert on the show not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved in all that?
So the way that Robert and I decided to co-found New Dimensions Consulting Services was because we had a common love, a common passion, a common purpose, a common assignment. And we volunteered, you know, as consultants and also as leaders and faith-based organizations and otherwise. And we looked at each other and we said, it was almost to the point of, you know, we can't get away from this, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a part of our life purpose, and there's not a day that we can go by and not help someone or not feel the burden or the urge to help someone. And when I say burden, not from the negative context, but from the context of it is absolutely a weight of the heart to be able to do so because it was what you were created to do. And
mm-hmm.
So in that, we just sat down one day and we created New Dimensions Consulting Services.
So now how old is it? I mean, how long have you been doing this?
New Dimensions Consulting Services is going on about 6 years at this point.
Okay.
And it has been a beautiful ride along the way. It has been one of the hugest learning experiences of both of our lives. But out of that, beautiful things were birthed. Out of it, Robert, for those of you who aren't aware, Robert Allen is the author of Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation.
Yes.
The reason why I have to bring that up is because I would like to backpedal a little bit on the first portion of your your question, Natalie, and that was, have you seen a difference in the care and in the need of those who we serve? And the answer is absolutely. And even before the pandemic, but especially during the pandemic, and Robert, I wouldn't even say he stumbled upon. He was purposed in the conversation of self-care and was led to write a book. And in that, trainings have been developed. Retreats have been developed. Again, a book has been written. And articles have been written. And partnerships have been formed. All on this concept, this construct of self-care, which beforehand was categorized and defined as a pedicure, a manicure, you know, a bubble bath, a night out. And what Robert really excelled in doing was really dispelling the myth that it's just that, but really opening it up until it's to where it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
It's addressing stress. It's addressing trauma. It's addressing limited thought processes and limited thinking patterns and really assessing who you are and why you are and how you are. And addressing what he has dubbed the four pillars of self-care. And so even in that, we've addressed compassion fatigue that has gone up hundreds of percent in the past couple of years, and burnout prevention, stress, anxiety, and depression.
Yeah.
And what is so phenomenal about the work that we do is that we also have Valerie Woods, who is also a leader on our team, who, believe it or not, we are so proud of this, who is a therapeutic art coach. Can you believe that, Natalie?
Oh, wow.
And we've not heard of very many coaching services at all with this service. And we love it so much because we understand that people are hurting, right? And people need care. And not often do people want to be diagnosed by a licensed therapist. Importantly, they require, and their circumstance necessitates care. And so what Val has the expertise in doing is using art and using the abstract to tell a story of healing, a story of restoration, a story of stress relief and burnout prevention. And she can speak to it far more articulately than I can, but really coupling, you know, her niche of therapeutic art coaching and spiritual guidance and doing the same with self-care and Robert's niche and my niche in self-worth and care and love and just really pulling together a service that is really needed. And it doesn't matter your social economic status, what you do for a living, what you make and where you live. I think what is so beautiful, although it's heartaching, is that this is a story that we all tell, Natalie. These are feelings that we all have. And so there's no one that's exempt. So it puts us on a level playing field, if that makes sense. It's a commonality from which we can all work together. We're all hurting. We all need a break. We all need to learn how to take a break and not feel guilty about it and understanding what it means to truly give yourself a break. You know, Natalie?
Oh, no, I know. You know what happens to me? I am so focused on the things that I do. I mean, sometimes I'll say, okay, I'm going to watch something on Netflix, right? And I start thinking, what else could I be doing at the same time? And then I'll say to myself out loud, what are you talking about? Just sit and enjoy the movie. You don't have to be worrying about, oh, did this article come in, or I need to interview this person, or, but that's what you do. When you, that you get consumed by it. And I have been learning to take time. I mean, sometimes, you know, I have my phone. Sometimes it's in the bedroom charging, and I don't pay any attention. And I'm watching a movie. I love movies. I'm just a movie freak. I love scary movies. I love spiritual movies. I love movies that make you think. I'm not a person that loves comedy that much. And I don't know why. I think because I can't think. I just have to laugh. But I like to think. So you see, I'm always thinking.
Right.
That's, and you know, sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's bad. But I'm learning. I am learning to step away and enjoy and just, you know, look at something that I've really, read something, but reading is tough on me. I love to read, but my mind can still work while I'm reading, believe it or not.
Yep. No, I believe it because that's me as well.
And so that's the tough part, you know, is trying to close off certain areas, and then you have to, you know, like being entertained by something. I mean, come on, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You can look at a nice movie, or I love scary movies. I really do. Yeah, they're
can
always
have. Can I submit something to that thought, Natalie?
Huh?
I'd like to submit something to that thought, if you don't mind. There's something, I was in a global leadership conference probably 5 or 6 years ago, and learned about a concept that I've fallen in love with. I've not mastered it. But basically, it's called, in short, thoughtless moments. And you, much like me, it seems like it's so hard to turn the brain off, right? The brain is ever going, overthinking, processing all of the time. And so what I've learned to do in incremental spaces is what I call thoughtless moments, whether it's 30 seconds and then gradually lead up to 2 minutes. 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. And that's literally participating, experiencing, or involving yourself in an activity that requires zero thought. Especially when I'm coaching my fellow overthinkers and processors, I really like to walk through this because I would never tell anyone, start with 30 minutes of thoughtless moments.
Oh,
because
yeah,
then
you
you'll
can't
be
do
thinking
that
for 30 minutes. Well, what can I do that's thoughtless, right? But it's about,
I'm trying to think of what I can still be doing in 30 minutes. Yeah, no, that's
absolutely
not good.
But it's turning on music. It's turning on music. It's dancing. It's if you are slightly into social media or with you, going outside and, or inside and feeding your babies or taking a walk and literally starting with small increments of time to do so, and then over time increasing it, but giving yourself that permission to release the pressure of always having to have an answer or searching for one.
And you re-energize yourself that way.
You really do.
Like,
you
I've
really
already
do.
Got the big dishes ready for the deer. I did it before. you know, I mean, I cut up carrots and I cut up apples for them. I don't peel the apples. No, I don't do that. You're probably laughing. She probably peels the stupid apples. No, I don't do that. And I, you know, I make sure that it's all heavy enough because sometimes there's 9, sometimes there's 10, sometimes there's only 4. I just never know. But they come back later or in the wee hours of the morning. They'll come about 8 and then they come back again. But you have, I don't know, maybe you do know, I have such great pleasure when I'm preparing all of that, and I have a cat, and he sits there and he watches me, you know, and I talk to him, I say, no, this is for the girls, you know, I have to take care of them. And then I have 2 squirrels, I call them Fripp and Frapp, and I have a little dish for them now, and I put some special food in there for them, and the one shows up all the time looking in my window like, well, where is it? Where's our food? I had a bunny, but the funny thing of it is, my son, I ordered a deer food. Well, they sent us horse food, and my son was laughing. He said, what is that, something coming our way? And I said, what does that mean, I have to start feeding horses? You know, but I love animals. I love life so much, and I am an empath. I am, and I just love to see them. But, you know, I feed them at night. Because I don't want, I could probably get them to come during the day, but I don't want to do that. I don't want anybody to see them, and I don't want anybody to hurt them. So I let them come at night, see, because I'm keeping them safe. And that's what I'm doing for them. And I have Willow and I have Lily. They're the 2 big ones. And I'll call them. And a few nights ago, I went in to get the other big bowl. And I look out, and there they are. They're all waiting. They had never done that before. I was so excited about it. And I sent a text to my son. He says, oh, my God, I'm so happy for you. He feeds all of his during the day, so he sees them. They'll come right up. Mm-hmm. Mine don't do that. They're the night owls. You know, that's what they do. But it's okay. I don't mind it. I have a camera, so I can see them. And I could not believe this one looked at me, and I said, you know, you don't have to leave. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm bringing you all your nice food. And I turn the porch light on, and the outside light, that's their signal. Uh-oh, the lights are on. You know what that means. Food's coming out.
Yes.
But
absolutely. It's time to eat.
Yeah, but I get so much pleasure in doing that. Because I really don't go to the grocery store. I used to help people in the grocery store. I don't really do that anymore. I just use, like, Instacart and that. But I derive a lot of pleasure from helping people. And probably one of my greatest things is the magazine. I put my headphones on, play my rock and roll, because, you know, I'm from Detroit, Motown. I play my music, and I'm like in another world. Because I'm representing... Robert sent me something like him. Say, for example, I'm bringing him out. I'm bringing his information. I put his books in there. I do everything, all the links. But I get so much pleasure from it. And I know the higher-ups, the divines watching and saying, there she is. Look at her. She's not stopping. I'm not stopping. And you do the same thing by when you talk to people, you inspire them. You show them the way. You show them how to stay on the path. Because people get off the path. I think they kind of fall in a ditch or they hit a curb. Or they do, you know.
Yep,
and
none of us are exempt.
No. And you stumble and you fumble. I do that. I mean, I have moments where, you know, I think, oh, my gosh, how can I increase this? Like, the business on the other side is not quite as good as it was. But you know what I do? I just don't give up. That's me. I don't give up. I believe. And somebody told me that I'm fearless. Well, that could be too. I just know. I just know that it's going to be okay. It's going to be good. All of us are going to work
that.
Out. It's going to be good. It's all going to work
that.
Out. You know, I don't stress about it anymore. There for a while, I mean, I was causing myself a lot of heartache because, you know, I have all these people that work on the site and that some of them are making money, some of them are not, and it bothers me. But then I thought, you need to walk away from that thought process. You need to just leave it be. Just leave it be. Mm-hmm. Send them nice emails. Let them know how happy you are, that they're, you know, that they're hanging in, because that's what you have to do. You cannot give up ever. And I want, in the last email, that's what I said. You have to believe, like me. You cannot give up. I don't care what it is. Don't give up. So I would be great to talk to you for empowerment. I don't know.
Anytime, Natalie. Anytime. I would love it.
Yes, you know. Well, what else can I do, you know? I mean, everybody has moments where they think, and you've probably talked to people, oh, I don't know if I can do that. That's really asking an awful lot. And you're questioning yourself. You know.
It's those
like
limited
this,
thought patterns that I was talking
about.
Yes,
like
earlier.
You would be good at, like this flip magazine I want to do. There's not that many out there. And I have so many authors, and I have so many publicists, publishing houses. I mean, I just got 3 emails from different publicists already for the next issue. And I just think to myself, boy, you could really present all of this. Of course, I would like to see some ads come through because I have to make money at it, but not that much. I mean, I'll devote all my time. It doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. I'm healthy. And I can't ask for anything more. And I can think. And Jackie, my gal that does my ad, and she says, I really use the left and right side of my brain. She says, I've never seen any. I don't know how she sees this. But she says, I can't keep up with you. And because, you know, we're talking, and then yet a part of my brain is like, okay, don't forget to email her. You've got to get Rashida to write something for the magazine. So that's in the back of my head there. It's sitting there. You do
ma'am.
Things like that. You know, that's what happens. Now, look, you get everybody from all walks of life. I mean, is it successful people, people who are trying to develop something? I mean, what types of people come to you?
Every walk of life. I'm talking about small to large business owners, those that come from very affluent backgrounds, to those that are starting their career, to youth. I would be remiss if I didn't say that I know that a part of my assignment in this world is youth and young adults. Youth and young adults. Youth teens and young adults are my breath. And so it is as diverse as they come. And when I mean diverse, I mean by preference, gender, faith, background, education, socioeconomic status.
Near broke and the wealthy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But that's the beauty, and it's so funny to use the word beauty, but that's the beauty of it, because there's so much in this world that's red or is divisive, right, Natalie? But to understand that this is a space where there is no respecter of person and there's no one greater than the other. We all hurt. We all have pain. We all require, whether we want it or not, we all require and need a level of healing and wholeness. And so that's a common space, and we can all come together and we can throw away this ugly word called judgment.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's the common space that we sit. And for one, we can sit and we can share commonality. We can sit and we can share what's similar, regardless of where we come from and what we believe and what we do and what our ideologies are regarding life and faith. We can share a common space. And I think that that is so important, because what it is for me and for those who I have the absolute privilege of walking alongside is that it becomes a very humbling experience. And out of it births gratitude. You know, it births some of the highest level of gratitude that I've ever experienced and that I've ever seen. And I think that's the part that we can't walk away from and that we have to give a greater level of credence to, is the fact that we all share the same platform at some point or another. And that's important to not forget.
I'm looking at all of you, this whole group that's on your site. What a beautiful group you are, all of you.
Thank
no,
you.
Really. I mean, I only know you and Robert, but, I mean, I'm looking at the other ones, and they're very enlightening. There's something about them. Maybe it's in their eyes. I don't know. But it's almost like they're saying, we can help you. Come on, I can help you.
Absolutely.
What's your problem? What's your problem? You
and
know,
what
and
I
some
can say could, yeah. Oh, please
go ahead,
honey.
No, go.
Oh,
you go.
And I can say, what I can say to that group of people is that those people were strategically placed as leaders on the team. You have Clarence Moody, who is a literal architect of people and strategy and process. And he is a cultural anthropologist, and he is a teacher by gift. And he is called to men and to raise them up. You have Dana, who is the profitability prophet, productivity prophet, excuse me, and specializes in organization and how to be more productive in time and how to make best use. And she has her own organization, GPS Movement, where she really seeks to help walk alongside of single mothers and entrepreneurs who desire more for their lives. And then you have the great and incomparable Valerie Woods, who is someone who we've all had the pleasure of coming up under, who is our spiritual guide and a mentor to us in several forms and another. She is not only a minister, not only a coach, not only a mentor, not only a community activist, but she is one who takes up space in an entire room and will hug you from across the room and you sit like this.
Oh, I can. No, I can see all of you have that ability,
yes.
Though. I really can. I mean,
yes.
you just look at your pictures and like a glow. There's just something special about all of you. I see it in all of you. It's wonderful. Really, really. Valerie Woods, she just went by the screen. I see you, hello. But
yes, human beings.
Yes, what a group. I would love to meet all of you. Now, where are you at? Are you in Vegas?
We are. All of us are stationed and located in Vegas, of course, with the exception of Robert now.
Now, where is he at?
He's in Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But does he usually, he likes to be in Vegas, so it's all of you, right? I mean, is it by choice,
yes.
Or does he want to get back to Vegas, or he doesn't have to? I mean, everything is online, for goodness sake.
Everything is online, and the unique thing about Robert is the fact that we learned long ago, as our phenomenal and matchless leader, is that he's called globally. And Val even brought that out. Val Woods even brought that out, is that he is not one that will be stationary. I don't know if you're familiar with the term apostle. And so we kind of use that phrase to say he's called to the nations. He really is, and he's called to the states. And so a part of what he does is that he moves about, whether it's virtually or physically, because he's called to so many. And he's so gifted in what he does. And we are here not only to support him collectively and individually, but to help expand the work that we've all been given to do together. But he is one who definitely to the world. We all are. But you can really see the work in him. And I tease him all the time. And I tell him, I say, you never go anywhere and meet a stranger.
No. We had a wonderful talk, he and I. I know he told you, but it was amazing because sometimes I get requests to have somebody on the show from whoever, it doesn't matter who it is, and I don't know them from anywhere. I mean, I just don't, it's like sight unseen, and we've never talked on the phone. But I have found, and I don't really know what it is. I think I had him back in December. What I find or have found is that people that are drawn to my show for whatever way, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like he wanted you to talk to me. We always hit it off. I have not had, I take that back. I had one lady. And I was really taken aback by it. I was like amazed. She didn't like what I said about her. And I'm thinking to myself, I know what happened. And, you know, I am a reader. I do know what's going on. I think she had somebody listen to the show, and they probably pointed out something. Well, why did she say that? Because otherwise she adored me on the show. I let it go. It bothered me. Because she's the only one that I ever had. But yet the show went really good. I mean, you know, I don't know. And I just thought, well, it's obviously your issue, not mine. And it didn't stop me. It really, really didn't. And then I had a man come on. He was a director from out in California. And he was the husband of one of the publicists that I know very well. It was really tough with him. He, I told my friend, I said, I'm not Hedda Hopper. I'm not whoever, you know, all these famous interviewers. I'm not that. I'm just a lady who talks, you know, and I love what I do, and I bring you on to show the beautiful things that you do. Well, she wanted me to, she thought I should change the way I do things, and I said, you know what? I'm not changing anything. And that's been several years ago. We're still friends, but, you know, those two people, and, you know, it was like, God, I can't imagine why, because I've never had a bad, other than those two, a time where I didn't think it went super well, that I could email, like I can email you and say, okay, I need something for the April issue.
Right.
you know, you're on my reminder list. I don't get anybody that says no, even Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says no.
That's a part of gold, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have stuff like that. I love it, and I love meeting new people, and you've been just so wonderful. I knew I would like you right away. I looked at your picture. I looked at your picture and I thought, oh, we're going to hit it off. There's no doubt in my mind.
I'm glad to hear it. I had an amazing time.
Yes, and look at the time. It's 7 o'clock. I told you. You knew that we would not run out of words to say here.
I between you and I knew that time, of all things, would not be an issue.
No. You don't have to say, well, now what do I ask her? What should I say? But it just, you know, it just leads into one thing or another. And I have, you know, Candy, I have to thank her. She's in the chat room. She does the marketing and promotes everybody. And then I have Jackie. And Jackie says, oh, I didn't give enough information. I said, Jackie, you don't have to even do it. Just give me a little quick synopsis of them. I get everything out of them. She says, but how do you do that? And she said to me, she laughed. She says, oh, I need to not even ask you that. I know how you do it. I don't even need that. I'll find out what you do. I'll find out where you came
from.
It's easy.
Absolutely.
It's easy.
Absolutely.
But you're wonderful. And I'm so glad
thank
we were
you.
Introduced. And I will send Robert a thank you.
And
look for my email now. You know, I've got your email address, and also I've got your phone number here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Correct. So don't be hiding on me now, girlfriend, at all, because you can't, because I will find you. You can run, but you cannot hide from Natalie. No.
I will not run or hide. It was quite a pleasure, and I really appreciate your time and having you on Mystic Living. It was quite a pleasure.
Oh, yes, and we'll have you in a few issues if you're willing to submit anything. I mean, you don't have to write a book to be in the magazine. I mean, I have poets, one from Japan, one from China, one from India, and I think back, I don't even know how. I know how one of them found me, but the other two, they just kind of like, here they are. And once they're on. They never leave. I'll send them reminders. Oh, yeah, just give me a couple days. I'll whip something up. And they do.
Wonderful.
That's what makes
wonderful.
My work easy, and meeting people like you. So
I appreciate that.
You have an awesome evening, and
make sure
be well.
The same.
Yes, and be safe. And we're going to end the show. I always end it this way, Rashida, is believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And then I always play the song that's called Free to Love by Gabby Ray. And you're going to like this. It's going to make you want to get up and dance, kind of. I mean, it's a feel-good song. And I always like to end everything like that. And this is Candy's friend. I have not ever met this gal, but, boy, she's talented. So we're going to do that. And I will talk to you very soon, dear heart.
Thank you so much. All the best to you. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, here we are. Remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And here is our music to end the show, Free to Love.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show up.
good night, everybody. Have a great evening, and know you're all loved very much.